You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When a young person commits a crime, a very common response is to blame video games, especially violent ones, for this criminal act. The recent mass shooting at a Florida high school was no exception. 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz told police he was the one who killed 17 and wounded many more. And here's President Trump talking about that and the other school shootings.
We have to do something about maybe what they're seeing and how they're seeing it, and also video games. I'm hearing more and more people say the level of violence on video games is really shaping young people's thoughts.
Indeed, President Trump is calling video game industry leaders to the White House for a meeting this Thursday. The focus? Whether violent video games contribute to real-world violence in our country. Western Michigan University criminologist Whitney DeCamp has been researching exactly that question. He is an associate professor of sociology, and he is with us now. Whitney, welcome to Stateside.
Hey, great to be here.
So what prompted you toward looking into this research, whether video games spark violent behavior?
Well, it wasn't something that I was initially planning to study, but maybe about a decade ago, I attended a talk by Professor Ray Paternoster from University of Maryland, and he talked about a particular method for studying things that are the result of a selection bias. And after thinking about it for a while and also reading some news stories about politicians saying that video games were responsible for some violence, I realized that I could use the method that I had heard about to study this phenomenon, and I wanted to try that out. And I managed to find some data sets and gave it a try, and I started down a path that got me to where I am now with several studies under my belt looking at this.
And when you talk about selection bias, explain to us what that means and how you constructed your studies.
Well, selection bias can refer to a lot of things. In this particular case, selection bias refers to the fact that people who play violent video games are probably already different from people who don't, even before they start playing them, because there's a difference. Some people choose to play violent video games, some people don't. Some people choose to play them a lot. Some people only try them out and decide they're not for them. The decision that leads to somebody playing video games a lot versus not is already representative of a personality trait, something where they might be attracted to violence. And it's really important that we control for that, because if we just ask the question, do you play violent video games and did you engage in violence, we might get a misleading correlation, one that is present but doesn't mean that it's causal. It doesn't mean that playing video games caused them to act violently. They were already potentially on that path before video games entered the picture.
Okay, so what did you find? Because the big question is, is there a relationship between playing these violent video games and engaging in criminal violent behavior?
What my research indicates is that for young males, we don't see that relationship there. We see a correlation, but not a causal relationship. Once we control for that underlying propensity towards violence, there's really not much of a relationship that survives in terms of a connection between video games and real-life violence. What we do see is factors relating to their home life, to their relationship with parents that matter. Children who have a strong relationship with their parents are a lot less likely to engage in violence. Kids who are in a safe home where they don't see or hear violence, where they're not the victim of violence, they're a lot less likely to engage in violence as well if they're not exposed to violence in real life. And those factors matter a lot more than playing video games or media or anything like that.
Now, we know California tried banning the sale of violent video games to minors, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, they struck down that law and said it was a violation of teens' First Amendment rights. Do we know if there are still states that are trying to enact some kind of a video game ban for minors?
Well, the Supreme Court decision in that regard was very strong. The rationale for striking that down was that essentially you can't take away someone's First Amendment rights unless you have a really compelling reason. And the body of research that exists at that time and since then, really, doesn't show that there is that causal relationship. So there's not enough of a danger to justify taking away someone's First Amendment right on this. So I think a lot of states have backed down from that attempt because it's been very clear that the Supreme Court ruling pretty much just shot down that entire effort to try and make it illegal to sell video games to children. At the same time, there's a couple things I should note. One is that stores are still welcome to restrict who buys video games, and most retail stores do restrict that. It's actually harder for a minor to buy a violent video game than it is for them to buy an R-rated movie, for example, based on some studies that have been done by the FTC using mystery shoppers. There have been some other efforts to try and use legislation to address this issue. A representative in Rhode Island was attempting to pass a tax on video games based on whether or not they have violence. But that, again, would be problematic under the Supreme Court ruling, because then you'd essentially be taxing something based on what the Supreme Court has decided is a First Amendment issue. I don't think legislation like that is particularly likely to move forward unless and until we see new evidence that shows there is a link, and I haven't really seen anything like that recently. Then I don't think that there's going to be much progress on this front to address it through legislation.
As a criminologist, you try to figure out why someone commits a crime, and that is certainly top of mind in this country after the Parkland, Florida school shooting and other school shootings. What is your sense as to what's happening in the mind of a school shooter?
That's something that's really hard to say, because I think a lot of these situations are very unique and really would require an in-depth case study to understand what might be the thought process involved. But some of the things that we can see from general trends along these lines, if we look at the cases and just try and figure out what the common elements are, a lot of times we see people who have a lack of a social bond to society. And that's a criminological term. A social bond is usually expressed through an attachment to your parents or to teachers in school or even to positive peers who aren't engaged in violence. Additionally, we also seem to see a lot of these people who are engaging in shooting tend to be under a good bit of strain. They may be victims of bullying or teasing or just having trouble in school. These are things that we often see as predictors of violence in general. It might be the case that these are also predictors of a willingness to engage in a mass shooting. To my knowledge, there hasn't been a study that has been able to get enough power to look at this issue, because thankfully, despite this being in the news a lot, it's still a fairly rare crime in comparison to a lot of the other violence that's out there. And so I haven't seen any sort of quantitative study that's been able to look at this and really determine whether or not these are common factors. But just anecdotally, based on what I've read, I wouldn't be surprised to see these being some of the contributing factors to the situation.
I'm interested, Whitney DeCamp, in whether you have any thoughts as to why these school shooters are virtually all boys. Now, I will point out in 1979, Brenda Ann Spencer killed her principal and a school janitor, and she wounded 8 students at her school in San Diego. She's the one who purportedly told a local reporter, "I don't like Mondays. This livens up the day." But basically, we're talking about boys when these happen. Any idea why?
Well, that's a good question, and it's something that criminologists have been studying for quite some time. We've known that gender is a very strong predictor of violence for quite some time. It's been considered the strongest predictor in a lot of situations. And the more serious the type of violence that we're talking about, the more likely it is that it's a male rather than a female. There have been a number of studies that have tried to sort this out, speaking in terms of violence in general, not specifically shootings. We've essentially eliminated a lot of biological chemical causes for this difference. What it seems to be is more masculinity in terms of social expectations and upbringing. Boys are a lot more likely to be socialized in a way where they, for whatever reason, are more likely to engage in violence. It may be seen as a masculine trait, and that may discourage young women from becoming involved in this. We've seen over the last 50 or 60 years with the women's liberation movement in the 70s that we started seeing rates of engaging in crime converging between men and women, but it remains true that the more violent the crime, the less likely it is that we're going to see a woman engaged in it. As far as why that goes, I think it goes back to that issue of upbringing and seeing violence as a masculine behavior.
So the research that you've done to this point suggests that video games do not spark violence, but what's the next question you want to look into about video games?
There's a number of different directions that I think we can head from here. I'm continuing to study violence in video games because it is, of course, still a major topic and one that's somewhat controversial. But in addition to that, there's also been some concerns about video game addiction and factors surrounding that. And so that's one of the things that I'm beginning to study and do some analyses with. In a nutshell, people are concerned that some youth are becoming obsessed with video games. There certainly are anecdotal cases where that does seem to be the situation. But one of the questions that I have, is it really video games or is it just hobbies in general? Is there something about video games that makes them unique? I haven't really heard much in the way of a compelling explanation for why video games are different from any other type of media consumption, or for that matter, other types of hobbies. You could become obsessed with anything, really. I think separating out video games and making it seem like they are a greater danger for this is a bit premature at this point.
To that point, how do you think that Thursday meeting at the White House is going to go down between the president and video game industry leaders?
The ESA, which is the organization that represents the video game industry, has made it pretty clear what they're going to do at that meeting, and that is they are going to try and set the record straight. They're going to say that the research studies that are out there don't support that there is a connection between playing violent video games and engaging in real-life violence. We've seen a number of politicians, not just President Trump, but others, make very clear statements that there is a connection, and the ESA would like to use this meeting as an opportunity to set the record straight and clarify that that is not what the research supports.
What do you think a parent should take away from what you're saying today? What should a parent do or not do if they've got a kid who is pretty obsessively playing a video game that has a lot of shooting and violence? What would you tell that parent?
Well, I would tell that parent just the fact that they're concerned about their children and their exposure to violence already tells me they're probably an involved parent and one who has a good relationship with their children and wants to be involved in their daily life. That alone is already going to say that their children are probably at much lower risk for being involved in violence. I would then also say that the research doesn't suggest that playing violent video games is a risk factor for engaging in real-life violence. And in fact, some studies have even shown that it might be the opposite. The fact that they're inside, engaged in a behavior that isn't hurting anyone, is actually making them less likely to be involved in real-life violence. There's a number of positive benefits from playing video games, including higher interest in computer science. Better hand-eye coordination is another classic one, and a number of other positive pro-social outcomes have been observed. I would tell that parent that that doesn't mean that they should absolutely consider violent video games harmless. If a child is very young, for example, exposure to violence might cause them to have nightmares or make them feel like the world is unsafe, regardless of whether or not they are in a safe environment. And so parents should certainly consider whether or not exposure to violence is right for their children. But if they're worried that it's going to cause their children to go out and hurt other people, the research just doesn't support that.
Whitney DeCamp is a criminologist, associate professor of sociology at Western Michigan University, where he directs the Kircher Center for Social Research. Fascinating research, and I want to thank you for taking time to share it with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.